Hello and welcome to Presenting, a podcast where we chat about various topics related to role-playing games, typically Paizo products such as Pathfinder and Starfinder, but also others. I'm John Godek, and with me today is Joseph Blomquist. Welcome to the podcast.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Yeah, it's great to finally get a chance to chat with you. Joseph is a freelance author who has worked on the Smallville role-playing game, Marvel Heroic Role-Playing Civil War, X-Men, Marvel Heroic Role-Playing Game Annihilation, the Red Dragon Inn Adventure Series Appetizer, as well as two Starfinder Society scenarios, one of which I've played, not the other, and several monsters for the recently released Pathfinder 2 Second Edition Bestiary 2. So you've been pretty busy doing a lot of stuff in role-playing games outside of Paizo, but like for a long time, it looks like.
Yeah, I started becoming a professional, I guess I'll put it that way. I've been freelancing for about a decade.
Wow.
It took me a while to get into Paizo because most of my work had been word of mouth. So, you know, by the time I found my way into Paizo, it was because I was already GMing for them and I was a venture officer and I made my presence known.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you know, it's interesting. Talked to John Compton in an earlier interview, and that was like one of the ways that he kind of got in. He was a venture captain and, you know, got invited in. So can you tell us a little bit about your path to becoming an RPG writer, kind of
sure.
How you got started to where you are today?
So becoming an RPG writer is something that happened to me that I didn't realize I had already kind of formed that part of myself. When I was a kid, me and my two best friends, Chris and Patrick, were playing role-playing games left and right. You know, we were playing like D6, West End games, Star Wars, things like that. Mm-hmm. And I wanted to get them into D&D. I was really, really, really into the Dragonlance series of books. And and I felt that D&D was a little more advanced than what they were prepared for. So I was just going to do a simple D100 system where everything was on a percentile. I'd make a graph and then I would just tell the story. And, you know, when you're 11 years old, you don't realize that you just wrote a game.
Mm-hmm.
And it became a thing where we stopped buying games because we were 11, 12 years old. We had no money. We stopped buying games and just started making them.
Mm-hmm.
And that was something that had stayed with us. You know, a lot of people have asked, how do you get involved in writing for games? Well, have you ever decided you want to create a house rule? Have you ever tried to come up with your own campaign? These are all things that we do as game designers, and that's kind of how we started. Professionally, the turn changed in about 2003. I used to run a game store out on Long Island called Monkey Head Games. it's been almost 20 years. But Monkey Head Games was owned by my friend Mac, who eventually made me a part owner, and I was running the store for him. And we would go back to, hey, here's a thing I want to play, but it's not quite right. Well, let's make it ourselves, and let's figure a way to make it work. And that kind of started me on a path where I was like, no, I created something that I really liked. I created this mechanism for doing miniatures games with a superhero, like a superhero game that felt like Necromunda or Mordheim with a really good campaign element. I want to see this thing through. Mind you, it's the white whale that I've been traipsing on for 20 years and has never got. I will one day publish it. It's just not something I got done. But that became my in. Out of our store in Monkeyhead, we had friends who went to the same college as me who owned a game company called Slugfest Games. Slugfest Games is known for, right now, it's known for its big seller, The Red Dragon Inn, but The Red Dragon Inn hadn't come out yet. They had a game called On Guard, which was like a dueling game. They had Kung Fu Fighting, which was a over-the-top fighting game. They also had a variation of Go Fish called Fishing for Terrorists that was absolutely hilarious. But my wife and I had moved out to Cincinnati after I left the store, and they were going to be at Origins, and I wanted the excuse to go to Origins. And they were like, well, why don't you help out at a booth? So I started helping out at the booth. My wife and I both would become their booth monkeys. And while we were working for Slugfest, I wanted to do something with Superhuman, which was that game that we had come up with back in Monkeyhead. And I was like, well, I'm not really sure how good it is. Let me just make a demo of it, just something I can get out there. So I made a pretty well-designed demo that gave you little standees that you could play with, gave you all the rules, gave you a little map. It was like 20 pages. I printed out 50 of them the night before Origins, and I handed them out to game designers I respected. With my card on the back, here's a note, here's what I was trying to do. I would love feedback. Wasn't trying to sell it, wasn't trying to get it in. I just wanted feedback from people that I respected. So I gave it to Chris Premis, I gave it to Steve Kenson, I gave it to Jamie Chambers, I gave it, thankfully, to Cam Banks at Margaret Weiss Productions. That summer, Cam contacted me and asked me, based on what he'd seen in Superhuman, I obviously knew my way around comic books and I knew my way around comic book gaming. Would I be interested in working on a comic book project with him at Margaret Weiss Productions? Well, of course I would. So he hired me and my wife to be on the writing team for the Smallville role-playing game.
Nice.
Yeah,
nice.
And I mean, in that I wrote powers and I wrote other abilities that informed what they were already writing. I mean, when you look at that game, between Cam and Bobby and Josh Roby, this was an amazing piece of work. And I was just kind of adding to it, but it also won all kinds of awards. So, you know, it's a good way to start your career.
Well, I tell you know, as a kid growing up, I played, you know, basic box D&D, going up D&D and a bunch of other D20 games. One of the games I wish that was a lot bigger now would be something like a superhero role-playing game. So there's Mutants and Masterminds out, but I got nobody around here that really wants to play that. You know, it's just not big of a seller. And you would think with all these comic book movies, I'm a huge comic book person. I've been collecting since 1970 early. And I have boxes and boxes and boxes of bagged and boarded comic books. And I that's one of the things I wish I could get into right now is a good comic book game.
Well, I will make a couple recommendations for you because everyone needs good recommendations.
Okay.
If you can get copies of it, my absolute number one recommendation is Marvel Heroic Roleplaying. Not because I worked on it, but because the perspective it takes is that you're not necessarily just playing a character. You're a creator. And this is a comic book summit, and you're at a writer summit, and you're getting ready for the next big event, and you need to make the argument about what your character does. Because if you've ever played a Cortex game, there's a lot of projecting what you're going to do. Hey, my character's lying to you. Do this. Not, I'm going to tell you this, and you have to guess. My character's lying. Here's why. Well, here's why. Let's go. Mm-hmm. And that plays really, really well in Marvel Heroic. Now, of course, the other recommendation I'll make you will be Superhuman if I ever get off my butt and release it.
Well, that's what I'm hoping for.
Yeah, so Superhuman became a role-playing game. It started out as just I'm going to make a skirmish-level miniatures game that's going to be fun for those people like me that grew up with Necromunda. And it became, all right, miniatures are really expensive to make. Why don't I make it a role-playing game? And as I'm making a role-playing game, I'm using all of the math that I used to make the miniatures game work in the background. Well, that becomes how I stat out my characters. It kind of means that I can just use the miniatures game as a conflict resolution method, and we can sit here and have a great hybrid game with a city built onto our table. and mm-hmm. play it with measuring and everything and have a ball. And that means if I ever do release it as a miniatures game, every single character that comes out can be used in your role-playing game. And every single character you made could be used in a tournament-level miniatures game because it'll all balance.
Mm-hmm.
Well,
you know, it's interesting. That sounds a lot like Owen Casey Stevens and how he got started basically creating games because he didn't have access to a lot of the books and things that we have now. He had little bits and snippets, so he made up the things the way he thought they should be going, how they should run and do things. So if you have a chance, you should listen to his the interview I did with him.
He's wonderful, too. He's one of those people that if I could work for him, if I could just be in a room with him and Rodney Thompson for a day, my whole life would be great. Between listening to both of them talk about things like Star Wars D20 or like mm-hmm. the creations that they've come up with ever since, where mm-hmm. there's another superhero game that's worthwhile. Check out what Rodney Thompson has recently done.
And what's that one? I'm not sure.
It's a spinoff of his Dusk City. What was it? Dusk City Outlaws was a book he had done. A box role-playing game that's single-serving role-playing where you get together
and create everything.
And that is built in a feudal city with guilds and you're essentially playing leverage in that city. Well, he made mm-hmm. a superhero version of it called Spectaculars.
Oh, cool.
Which, again, it's single-serving. Like, you create your characters, create the storyline, create the world, play it that day.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. No, that actually sounds – so I have a couple like regular gaming groups that – haven't met in person for 3 months, mm-hmm. but that's one of the things that we would do is in between our society games, we would say, hey, let's go take a one shot. You know, like we did Shadowrun, The Expanse, and mm-hmm. I'm trying to get them to actually do some Mutant Mastermind modules. And so that sounds like a nice one to kind of add to our collection of things to run.
Spectaculars would be a great one to add to your collection.
So tell us, you know, how, you know, from your beginning there. And so you started game designing actually, you know, how did you get in your foot in the door to actually writing for Paizo? Because that's something a lot of folks aspire to do, and there's a lot of different paths to getting there. So I'm always curious to hear what your particular path was.
So as with anything with me, it seems fairly convoluted. But if I do the TLDR version is I sent an email. But understand, by the time that I got to the point where I was, I'm just going to send Thirsty an email, I had been the venture lieutenant for Cincinnati for the Pathfinder Society, or now the Organized Play Foundation. I'd been doing that for about 5 years,
mm-hmm.
And I take a lot of pride in that. Cincinnati is an amazing place to play games because we are. It's almost like Mecca, because we're like 100 miles almost exactly from Gen Con and Origins, the two mm-hmm. biggest gaming conventions in North America, and they're just a quick drive away. Mm-hmm. So it's such a great place for gaming. But when I became the venture lieutenant for Cincinnati, there wasn't a lot going on. We had just lost our venture lieutenant. I hadn't even been playing organized play outside of my home with my friends for much of anything. Like, I'd played a few games in the first couple seasons, but then I really was just playing home with my friends and bringing new people in that way. So it was a chance for us to have a full rebirth. Well, we succeeded, and we succeeded really well. Like, our city is one of the strongest that I know of in society play. And because of that, we started to kind of spread our wings to the different conventions. So Starfinder comes out. Around the time Starfinder comes out, I had just gotten my fifth star for playing Pathfinder Society, which meant I had played 150 games, and I had my venture captain sit in on one of the games that I ran and graded me. I had run a certain amount of specials. It's a lot of work to get that fifth star, and it really was a lot of satisfaction, but it meant that I had a good grasp on Paizo's style of writing in Pathfinder 1. So when Starfinder came on, I dove headlong into it. This was the thing I was waiting for. you're giving me Star Wars and you know, Dragon Slayer in the same breath. Mm-hmm. You're really, really playing up space fantasy, and that's amazing to me. That's what I had always dreamed of. And I dreamed of that since Star Frontiers. I wanted that mix. Well, we had the special at Origins, the very first multi-table special for Starfinder. By this point, I had logged more Starfinder games than probably anyone else in my state, because I was just dogmatic about it. And I was close with a gentleman named Brent Bowser, right, who was right. The RVC, and he was at the time we were co-venture lieutenants over the city, and Brent luckily had Thirsty's ear because he would be one of the people helping to run Origins. Mm-hmm. So I was running the highest table at Origins for the special. I want to say it was a level 8 at the time. So it was the first time a level 8 was being run in organized play for Starfinder Society. And mm-hmm. Thirsty would keep walking over by the table, and him and John both walking by the table to see how it was going, because there was a lot going on in this special, and seeing how a level 8 table was the first level 8 table ever for Starfinder, seeing how that was going to play was going to be really interesting to them. And so I kind of made sure that I put on a good show. Mm-hmm. The whole time saying to Brent, I want to write for Thirsty. I want to write for Starfinder. Find out what I need to do. Brent comes back and he's like, here's Thirsty's address. You should just email him. So I'm like, really? It was that freaking simple this whole time? Mm-hmm. So in the end, what I did after I'm assuming that I had impressed Thirsty because he did respond to me, is I sent the email. And Thirsty initially during conversation had said, like he says to everyone else, do yourself a favor. Try to get into Wayfinder, because Paizo finds so many great writers in Wayfinder, and Wayfinder offers you this freedom to just write something fun. So I submitted an email to Thirsty. June came, and I right away put in for Wayfinder also, not expecting Thirsty to have responded. At this same time, Steven, I can't remember his last name, the guy who used to be in charge of Pathfinder 2, Radley?
I don't know him, sorry.
He reached out on Facebook. I'm Facebook friends with him. I should know his name. I should know his last name. It's not in my head. He reached out on Facebook saying, if anyone is interested in writing for Paizo, reach out to me. Mm-hmm. So he was trying to get people to write for the bestiary, mm-hmm. however you pronounce it. And I sent him an email. I sent him, here's my CV. Here's all the stuff I've worked on. I would love to write a monster or six for you. Mm-hmm. They have an upper limit when you're just starting out with them as to what they can put you on. So they put me on for 3 monsters. Of the 3 monsters that I picked, all of them were in my top 5. I wanted something that was classic D&D. I got the Blink Dog. I wanted something that was a classic mythological creature. I got the Hippogriff. And I wanted something very specific to Galarian. And I got the Sandpoint freaking Devil. So I was like, all right, this is a bonus. As I was writing those for him is when I got the email back from Thirsty saying that they are going to try people out using the quests. Would I be interested in writing one of them? And and of course, I jumped on that. And the rest is history. I mean, after that, Thirsty felt I did a good enough job that he offered me Illegal Shipment, which you said you had played one of the adventures.
I played Illegal Shipment.
What did you think of that one? I loved that one. It was hard.
Good. It was fun. Yeah, yeah. I just played it, I think, just 2 weeks ago. So,
I'm really, really proud of that. It was the research that I put into it meant that inevitably coming out of it, I knew that I'm going to run the Attack of the Swarm AP now, because I had just read the entire AP as I would like 4 or 5 times as I was researching for Illegal Shipment. Man, that was a good one to write.
Well, that's the interesting thing. So this was at my home group that was playing it, and we are actually in book 4 of Attack of the Swarm right now too. So as soon as it started up, it's, oh, wow, this is so cool, you know, getting that overlap. Well, this is really encouraging to me, in part because at Origins, not at Gen Con last year, I ran, I think, one of the first level 12 tables.
Oh. And I've run,
there was only two of us, two tables run there. I think me and, Brown?
Gary?
Oh, not okay. Gary. Gary didn't, I don't think Gary ran a 12 there. There were two 12 tables that were there. And I had two venture captains of my four players. Two of them were venture captains.
Nice.
And unfortunately, I only had like around 90 tables at the time. So I didn't get any evaluations. And so now, this year, it's all kind of shot. So,
But at the same time, that still counts as one of the 10 that you need for specials you need.
Well, I did nine conventions last year to get specials. And so I have two more I need to get. And I'm hoping to get one at Gen Con Online this year. I heard the Starfinder special is supposed to be offered there.
Yep.
And so I hoped it, you know, as one of the not that many four Novas that we have out there, hopefully they'll let me run that. And I am also currently
a four Nova. I think I have six specials. Mm-hmm. And I'm pretty sure I've got all the rest of my boxes ticked. I mean, I need to do the games with my VC or leadership, but mm-hmm. you know, my VC Heather and my and leadership on up, these are all people that I'm friends with. I'm more than happy to go say, hey, sit at my table. You know what you're expecting.
Well, and that's the thing is I know a lot of VCs all across the country, and like I would have no problem, you know, at PaizCon if we had it, or if Origins was going on, that, you know, hey, can you sit down and at my table? But the issue is like, there's no special, so I got to wait for the online, and I'm hoping, you know, I'm hoping to get somebody there. Maybe I'll run it three times for three different people. I'm not really sure how that's going to work. because they're only going to run it once at Gen Con, probably, right?
That's right. So then they'll open it up for other.
Right. And I've organized local specials here. That's how I've got some of mine at some local cons. And mm-hmm. and so if they open it up for a small convention after Gen Con, I guarantee you we'll run it out here in Seattle. So
nice. Well, I mean, it's Seattle. That's a given.
Yeah, it's – well, I'm curious, how big is your Cincinnati – group there? How big's the lodge? How many regular tables do you get on a weekend?
So we've got 11 stores.
We
run one or two tables on each store. Each time we run, and every store runs every week. Well, no,
right.
Some stores run every other week, but I mean, I count, and I probably shouldn't. I count Northern Kentucky, even though Northern Kentucky has its own VL. We all kind of, all of our people kind of mix. We've got a really stupidly large presence, and I can't be more proud of it. Every single person that runs and plays in my group has been great. And one of my VAs and one of my player base have essentially been leading us while we've been sequestered away in running online so well that it's like, kind of think we should just promote them and we're all done. Let's just play on their tables now.
Well, that's, you know, I've been pretty much organizing everything out here for a couple years, Starfinder wise. My particular store was the only place that did Starfinder for 2 years. And in fact, still, I think, we're the only ones. But I have some significant health issues coming up. And so at May, I said, hey, look, I need to step back a little bit. So here's a couple other people. Can you guys step up? And they've been doing just a great job. And it's like, wow, I should have done this last year, you know? So
yeah,
taking some of the load off.
I've been in organized play to some degree since maybe Living Greyhawk. Mm-hmm. And I have not seen the level of community that we get out of Paizo's organized mm-hmm. play in any other organized play. Like up to this time, I've been in the Warhammer organized play community, which, I mean, you can call it organized play, but it was really just a street team. Mm-hmm. And even then, when we were the only kids on the block, there was just nothing like there is now. And I can't, I can't get over how great it is and how great it is to see in our city and in other cities that are doing well.
Well, you know, this PaizaCon Online was four times as big as any in-person PaizaCon they've had for attendance.
Oh, good. And it really upset me that this is the first PaizoCon that I've been able to go to, because I spent the entire time in this freelance room talking to other freelancers and making these connections that I never could have made at Origins and Gen Con. And I love Origins and Gen Con, but man, this was so good. And everyone was so passionate about the same things. Like we'd be watching the Twitch streams and then jumping in to the Discord to go, "Oh my God, Dennis, they just announced your game. This is amazing."
Yeah.
So that's PaizoCon. I call it PaizoCon Online. PaizoCon Online has been something special, I think. And I really hope that for people like me that can't make it out to Seattle, that they find ways to keep incorporating this online presence, because this was wonderful. Like I getting con dropped from an online convention is a new experience for me, because I've always had con drop.
Isn't that wild?
When you get to that like packing up stage and you're just sad because you know it's over and you're not going to see your con family for a year or so. But getting con drop from an online, because I was just hanging out in a Discord with them all week, that's sad.
Well, the way around that is you hang out with those same people anyway after the con.
Yes.
Because it's online, and you can still do it.
we've set up a couple online games that we're trying to get together to do like a freelancer exclusive AP that one guy is going to run, and I'm trying to get people together for doing a game at cons for freelancers where it's just, hey, you know what? We're all freelancers. Who wants to present the game that they released and kind of do it like a Dead Poets Society thing?
Yeah. That's, you know, and I was going to ask you kind of some of your advice for folks as they're wanting to get into RPG writing. And one of the things where I met you is actually through the Freelance Forge.
Yes. That would be number one on my list would be Freelance Forge. If you're listening to this and you haven't been to Freelance Forge, you need to immediately look it up if you really would like to be a part of it, because you will learn so much from other writers in those forums. But on top of that, when there are new opportunities, someone will post them right away.
It's a very supportive community too. It's
really
not like
is.
People competing against each other. It's more like people lifting up each other, you know?
But I find that very much in our community as freelancers as a whole. That just, the Freelance Forge just exemplifies that, because it's never really about, oh, you got it, I should have gotten it. It's more like, you got it, what did you do? How was it working with them? What was that like? You know, and that kind of exchange is very positive. And I find that Freelance Forge exemplifies that really well, and it's a really good place for that.
So to segue a little bit, what other advice do you have for people interested in trying to get into RPG writing?
Write everything you can. Come up with ideas for your own home games. Come up with changes that you want to do, things that work better for you. Write for your players and write for yourself and know the difference.
Okay. What about, you think organized play, being involved in that, is helpful in terms of being an organizer, or is playing enough, or GMing, or?
Yes. I mean, if you're involved in organized play, you're going to experience different play styles, and that's going to open your eyes quite a bit. I tell this story as like almost a war story. One of the things that I learned early on was due to Smallville. Our local store had an indie RPG day, where they were just going to run games that weren't D&D or World of Darkness at the time. And Smallville was out. So I signed up on the Smallville table, but I didn't let them know that I was one of the writers on it. And I thought it was going to be really interesting for me, because I wasn't sure how the game was going to roll out, and I wanted to see how they interpreted it. And the game was phenomenal. The GM was using he was telling the story in the Dresden Files, and he started it out with the Dresden Files rules for the first half of the session. Then we would take a break, and then he came back with all of our characters made for Smallville, and we continued to play just using the different mechanics. And at the very end, I said, you know, hey, we had actual introductions. Hey, you know, I'm Joe Blomquist. I'm one of the writers on that book. And the GM was flabbergasted because he had no idea. But at the same time, I learned so much seeing them play, seeing because it was a very different type of gaming group than I'd ever been experienced with. And their interpretation of the rules was different than I had seen it in my head. So something like organized play, where you get to play with different GMs or play with different players, it exposes you to things that you might not have seen at your home table. I would say that it makes you, not necessarily makes you a better writer, but it makes you more worldly to become a better.
That's been my general experience, especially with the conventions, you know, going to Origins and going to Gen Con, going to PaizoCon, you know, SkullCon, you know, some of the smaller regional ones as well. It's like people have different play styles, people have different GM styles. And so you get to learn about all kinds of cool stuff that your local group is always kind of pigeonholed one way. All of a sudden you get these people going way out in left field. It's like, wow, that is really cool. You know, that's like one of the things I experienced with PaizoCon Online. Played with some people from the UK that had some awesome builds that I never thought of, you
right.
know? So, well, this is great. So, you know, you've kind of written for a wide range of titles in a whole bunch of different genres. How does this help or hinder your writing?
So it makes me really, really good at certain genres. I would find that I have a lot of strength when it comes to superhero and sci-fi adventures, because there's a lot of interchangeability. And especially because when I started writing for things like Marvel, I focused on the Nova Corps, because I'm an old school comic book fan, and Nova's been my favorite. You know, I'm a kid from Long Island. Nova's always been my favorite.
Are you excited about the Nova movie coming out?
If it comes out, if it's legit, yeah. I was excited that they had the Novas in Guardians of the Galaxy, and I have a lot of friends that are in Nova groups that are like, oh, well, they ruined them. Man, you know what? No, they still gave it to us. They still gave us something, and it may not have been what we expected it to be, but it may be. It may be something that comes to pass. It may be something that doesn't. Mm-hmm. I hope it does. And if I don't care how they change it, I still am going to be full on in. So I've been really heavy into superheroes and sci-fi. So I find that my strengths come in there. I know what music to put on to get me in the right headspace. I know how to just let things pull me along. I don't necessarily have the same strength or the same backup, I think is a better word for it, when it comes to other genres like fantasy, even though the lion's share of my gaming my entire life has been fantasy. It's not that I don't know how to write it. I just don't have the headspace. I don't know how to fall into that headspace at the moment. That being said, I had more fun writing the Sandpoint Devil and the Hippogriff than I thought I ever could possibly have writing a monster. So whatever. And, you know, I had done the, after running Red Dragon Inn for years, I had done the little appetizer free download that we had on Paizo's site on PF1 versions of some of the characters for Red Dragon Inn. So, I mean, it's not too far out of my wheelhouse, but I find that it's a little harder to do multiple genres unless it's something you're already passionate about. So if I was hired today to do something in a World War II type game, I wouldn't know what I'm doing, because it's not something that I'm extremely passionate about. It's not like it would be like a King Arthur game or something like that. And it's not something that I've experienced before. That's not saying that I wouldn't find the passion for it. I'll give you an interesting example for this one. I accidentally wrote a role-playing game that became bigger than I expected it to. And when I say bigger, it means I like maybe 30 people know this game. but that's bigger than I expected it to because of a dare that Ryan Macklin had put on his blog a few years ago, where he said that there was a game, and if you haven't played it, find this free game called Lady Blackbird. And Lady Blackbird is really good at telling you a story and telling you the rules without being too overt about the setting. It implies the setting, but it doesn't tell you the setting. And he's like, I want to see if someone can do that in like 500 words. So I took it as a dare and I submitted an idea for a space Western called, at the time, I think I called it Kingdom Come. But there's already a game called Kingdom Come. So when I finally did actually make it for real, I called it Dime Stories. And I don't like Westerns. Not even a little bit. Like, it's just not something that I really care about. I mean, I've watched spaghetti Westerns my whole life, and I love The Mandalorian. Mm-hmm. Mandalorian is really what I was trying to write back then, but I didn't know what that was. but it's never really been something that I've been into. And it that became a real thing. I had to form a company because of this game, because I would get emails through Ryan's blog and eventually through my own blog where people were like, hey, if I'm playing Dime Stories, what do I do if I have this situation? Well, I guess I should write that. How would I advance a character? All right, I'll you make it based on money. I'll write something for you. And it became a 30-page book, and then it became a way for me to get some of my friends who wanted to break into writing, hey, you know what? Here's a couple hundred bucks. Write an adventure for me.
Wow. Really cool. And start off as a 500 word game.
Yeah. It became a 34 page game that I built a real setting around. I created Kingdom Come was originally the name of this world that was a backwater world that was in the middle of essentially like a gold rush. There is an element that makes space travel possible, and this is the last planet that it exists on. So there's this overwhelming imperial force trying to take control of it, but it's outside of the territory. So it is like the demilitarized zone kind of thing, but it's an old west kind of, miners and gold rush kind of feel. We ended up starting to write adventures for it, and the adventures were going to slowly tell the story of the Civil War, but through this lens of space Western. Mm-hmm. And the rules were never good. Like I still to this day, when someone's like, well, tell me about this game, Dime Stories. Well, it's not really a game. It's a terrible game. Like I wrote it in, after a surgery where I was recovering. So I was probably on medication to try to come on, and it was never meant to be a real game, but now we're building a second edition of it. And we're going to use, we've got a card based system for it where we're using poker as combat resolution. And it's because you're going to do a Western, you should have poker in it. I play tested it at Gen Con and Origins last year for the new mechanics for it, and they were a huge hit, and I started having people who were repeat offenders to keep coming back to play this game. We had done so that company, which is called Saturday Morning Games, we actually only have one game in print out, and that was written by one of my best friends, this guy, Jeff Lewis, that I dragged along to join me in writing stuff for Dime Stories. Well, he wrote a game as an homage to his brother who passed away a few years ago, called Punk's Been Dead Since 79, which is this amazing indie game about growing up in rural America, trying to make your way to a punk show in the 90s. when punk is kind of dead, in the late 90s, and it's an amazing piece, and it sells like wildfire, and it's arguably, other than the crappy PDFs that I've put out, is the reason why we're on the market. So so we've done those conventions where we would have these big events on Saturday mornings where he would run Punk, I would run either Dime Stories or Superhuman, because of course I really am going forward with this. Mm-hmm. And our other partner Jeff would run one of his games, Boldly Go or Dungeon Adventure, and we would just get a whole bunch of people that would come and play and have a great time. So
wow.
Yeah.
So what's next for you? You know, what other cool things besides getting some of the stuff out the door are you working on that you can talk about?
Actually, I can talk about several of my projects. I can, other than the stuff that's coming out for Saturday morning that I've already mentioned. Mm-hmm. For one of my partners, Jeff Batone, who used to be in Slugfest Games, he is releasing his sci-fi game called Boldly Go. Mm-hmm. Boldly Go is a wonderful game about it's a typical sci-fi game in the genre of, say, Star Trek or but it really does deal with the moral quandaries really mm-hmm. really really well. Reminds me of some of my favorite Starfinder adventures in that way, where you have mm-hmm. to ask the question at the end. You have like everyone arguing about, well, what are we going to do with this creature? Are we going to let it live, or are we going to let it destroy a planet? Mm-hmm. And so it's I'm doing all of the internal layout for them, because I do more than just writing. Mm-hmm. On top of that, the next thing of mine that's making its way to print was for Magic Vacuum. Magic Vacuum is now owned by Fandom, but it was the company that Cam Banks had created after he left Margaret Weiss Productions, and it has the Cortex license. So Cam just did a successful Kickstarter last year, the year before, for Cortex Plus, which was going to have, like, here's how you can build whatever system you want, and it incorporates Smallville and Leverage and Marvel and Firefly and all those great games that the Cortex license used, mm-hmm. Without actually being licensed. And so for Cortex Plus, I wrote one of his Spotlight programs, which was the if enough people had bought into the Kickstarter, then these Spotlight programs would come off. And I'd written one called Cosa Nostra. Hmm. So I come from an Italian family in New York, and at the lap of my grandfather would hear all these amazing stories from the 20s to the 40s about growing up in New York as an Italian kid and being mafia adjacent. Mm-hmm. And it really made me fall in love with mafia stories. And Cam wanted interesting voices, but he loved the idea of doing something historical. So I created Cosa Nostra through Cortex to really tell the story of the Castellammarese War, which was the war between the old guard of the mafia with these new young Turks in New York and New Jersey that wanted to do things differently. They didn't want it to just be Sicilian. They wanted to hang out with the Irish gangs and the Jewish gangs and bring them all together into one organization, and ended with Lucky Luciano being the boss of all bosses. Mm-hmm. So I got to tell this really cool mobster game and really evoke those elements of your family life and your life outside of the mafia, and how the things you do affect everything around you in a cool role-playing game. And actually do things like, if you've ever looked at Smallville has this thing called a relationship map, where it's not always as important what you can do as it is why you're doing it. So if you and I are very close friends, that friendship will matter when it becomes important. And you can do that with Mafia really well because the relationship between everyone matters. You can hate this person and that hatred is mutual, and we're really going to have extra dice because screw you. But you can do that with families in the Mafia as well. So, oh, well, that's the Genovese family and we don't like them. So let's go. They're Genoveses. We're going to bring our guns and we're going to have extra dice to roll against them. So, and that's the next big project that's coming out for me. I finished it a little while ago and I'm pretty excited now that Cortex Plus is out to see how the different spotlights come out.
Well, that sounds really, really pretty cool. It reminds me, and I can't for the life of me remember the game. There was a gangster-based D20 game from TSR back in the 80s.
Oh, yeah.
Wow. Yeah, and I don't remember what it was, but I just remember, you know, weapons, Tommy guns, Browning submachine guns, and Browning automatic rifles. That was like the big weapon, you know, that they would bring out and stuff like that. So, wow. Yeah, and it's interesting. You know, all the different, I like having a system that you can put a lot of different contexts on like that so that you learn one set of rules. When I was playing back in the day, I really loved GURPS because of how you could extend it to so many different things, but nobody liked playing GURPS. So,
well, you got to remember at the time that was even before D&D 3.0. So GURPS was the first time you were really going to be something that was, I mean, to coin a phrase, universal. Right. And it sneakily made bad games better. I mean, and I might be cutting my foot off despite my face here, but I think of games like World of Darkness and how, from a game mechanics and dice point of view, it was so much more fun playing the GURPS version of Vampire than it was playing Vampire. So. You know, and just no one knew about it, so no one cared.
Well, Joe, thanks so much for being on the podcast today. I know we're probably not going to get you out to Seattle, but hopefully next year, if things settle down, I'll get a chance to hook up with you and chat some more at Origins. Sounds like that you regularly make Origins at Gen Con.
Yes, and in fact, I've been to every Origins since Origins 2, except for one of them.
Wow. Wow, very good.
My dad was a big Avalon Hill fan when I was a kid, and Origins 1 or Origins 2 was in New York. So ever since then, I've been to every one of them.
Very cool. Well, thanks again. It's been great chatting with you.
You too, John.